Balcone's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I'm your host, Christopher Hart. And this week, we sit down with a dusty hunter. This hobby, the gold mine, the general path of a bourbon enthusiast is someone who's mixing it first and then drinking with ice and then drinking neat and then drinking expensive. And then eventually you give up on the pappy and you give up on the blends and you realize that the gold mine and the delicious nectar in bourbon has to do with old bottles that are no longer around. Old distillation methods, old growth oak, cypress fermenters versus stainless steel tanks. There's a whole slew of reasons speculated as to why old bourbon was better. Not old in age, not 35-year-old bourbon. We're talking bourbon that was distilled 35 years ago. 80s, 70s, 60s. I mean, it goes back further and further. The love and passion for Dusty's is only superseded by the people who get to still find them in real life, find them in liquor stores. And there are people who dedicate their life, their time, sometimes doing it full-time as a job, will travel the world looking for old bottles of bourbon because they are highly valuable. You can skip all that. Go to Facebook, go to an auction house, and spend hundreds, if not thousands of dollars on a bottle and save yourself the time and trouble. Other people will take the time, they'll do the research, they'll travel around the U.S., find a bottle still sitting on the shelf in some dusty backwoods liquor store that's been around for the last 40 years, and pay pennies on the dollar for it, and then if they wanted to, they could turn around and sell it for hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. So it's a tremendously exciting hobby. And for those of you who've ever watched me interview a celebrity, I always try to bring a birth year bottle so that I can open a bottle with them and make it special. And one of the people that I buy from quite frequently is joining us today. His name is Robin McAdams. He is probably King Dusty of Texas, if I had to put a title to it. He's been to every single liquor store within the state of Texas, and that is saying something. So today we're joined by longtime co-host Todd Grube, Robin McAdams, and we talk Dusty's. Where to find them, how you find them, when you found them, and maybe some of his more idealistic finds. So without further ado, I don't have a sponsor read for you guys. Waterford is our Irish whiskey sponsor, sitting right here. Big fan. Can't wait to talk more on that. But more to come on Waterford in future episodes. In the meantime, please welcome Todd Grube and Robin McAdams. Cheers. Robin, buddy, thanks so much for doing this. You have been my drug dealer for the last couple of years. For those who are not familiar, which will be covered in the intro as well, that the art of dusty hunting, finding these old bottles from a bygone era, is something that has a devout following for some. There's some people who will literally take weeks and months off from their day job to go hunting all over the U.S. for bottles, and even at times doing it full-time. Some people do this. In fact, most recently, a gentleman in California found Cecil B. DeMille's bourbon stash from the 70s, 80s, and I mean a lot of old crazy bottles.
Yeah, that's right.
And they're highly valuable, they're very expensive, and I've been using you for at least in part for some of the Whiskey Social bottles. Every year for the Whiskey Social, the way that we operate is we operate without a license, and we're the only event in the state of Texas that actually features dusty vintage bottles of bourbon that you yourself have tracked down. In fact, I've said this before, you are arguably the reason why Houston is picked dry.
Man, you're going to make a lot of enemies.
Bring the mic up.
You're going to make a lot of enemies with me.
No enemies. But yeah, you've picked Houston over pretty good.
I think I've been to every liquor store in Texas that's opened before 2008.
Wow.
The way I sleep at night is I make a point of not actually rating everything. If I find a lot of something, I make sure to leave
something behind.
Yeah, I make sure to leave plenty behind. Or if you know I go back to the store every few months, I might take another bottle. But I don't really like. I feel like there's some bourbon karma there. I don't like taking everything.
Everything.
Yeah, it's just greedy. I don't want to do that.
So you actually, not that long ago, I think I met you at a brewery, and we were in the parking lot. I was buying some Wild Turkey decanters from you.
Yeah.
And you had told me that you had done quite a bit of research in advance, weeks, months, if not, and traveled to Chicago. You lived there for a little bit, just playing. Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego with Old Dusty Bourbon?
Why Chicago?
That's a good question. I was looking at. I started researching major cities, basically, and I've been to LA and San Francisco and a couple other towns. And when I was looking at Chicago, it's kind of famous for not having. Al Capone and breaking rules of prohibition. So I knew that bourbon went pretty far back in that area. But what really got me convinced was when I started to research the liquor licenses and the licensing system in Illinois. There really isn't a very organized one, and they seem to go based off of county by county instead of having a centralized system. And so that kind of convinced. I mean, so when I started digging even further into it. I learned that there is somewhere around 700 active off-premise liquor licenses in Cook County alone. So just by the sheer numbers, I felt like that was worth investing my time and energy
and money. Yeah, I mean, you basically dropped everything, traveled up there. You told me one story where a lot of places up there either used to be liquor stores or are currently liquor stores, but they have these basements just full of stuff that has been collected over the years that has gone lost. Like no one's paid attention to it. And you kind of bribed a little guy and got to go down and check out his stash. And you found a lot of like crazy bottles. It's something that is...
It was romantic, actually. It was super exciting.
I mean,
it's the chase. It's just.
Is that what you mean by off-premise liquor license?
It means on-premise is a bar because you're meant to drink on-premise. Off-premise is you buy a liquor bottle, you go home and drink.
You're not allowed to drink it there.
By the way, you should know that for the social.
Gotcha.
So like all liquor stores are off-premise.
Gotcha.
What makes it actually more confusing is that in Illinois they have some mix on off-premise where you can buy bottles. And drink it there.
Kentucky's the same way.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, we were in a bar and we got to order drinks and then take barrel picks home of Four Roses. Oh, remember when we were there? We bought a bunch. So it's a pretty neat idea, and it's crazy when you leave Texas and you see how much more liberal some states are.
Yeah.
And you realize why are we not doing this?
Yeah.
This makes perfect sense.
The closest that I've seen is in Austin, Nickel City. They have the stores directly next to it. So you can drink it and then walk literally next door.
10 feet.
Yeah.
It's so stupid.
Missouri is the same way, and so is Louisiana and some spots. Half of Louisiana is actually dry. I never knew that until I started really digging into the licenses there. But half the counties or the what are they called?
The parishes.
Parishes are actually dry parishes there.
Archaic shitholes.
So that place that you're talking about, that was an awesome find. I mean, just the building looks.
Well, I've thought about it for even now. I mean, that was months ago when you told me.
Yeah.
And it's funny. So, just a few years ago, back at the early stages of HBS, there were a few locations in Houston. Everyone was picking them over. Evergreen and Sugarland had a shit ton of product, early 90s turkey.
Yeah.
And that store was packed to the gills full of dusty bottles. And now it is, I've told everyone now, because it's funny, when you get in this hobby at first, you do that. You go liquor store to liquor store, you look for those hole in the walls and you look for things you wouldn't normally find. And people ask me now, where should I look? I said, you shouldn't look. Houston's done. Texas is done.
No, Houston's not done, man. It's really not. I mean, I found this just about a month ago. Well, actually, a few weeks ago, I found some pre-fire
Dant
private seller, some like from '92,
sure,
right when they bought it from Glenmore. I found some 200 milliliters of those. A lot of people overlook 200 milliliter and 375 milliliter bottles. I found some awesome bottles.
Hey man, I'm one of your number one customers. What's up? You can't throw a tip my way?
Yeah. Okay. You know what? I would say one of the best stores that I keep going back to and the people are great is Lobe.
Believe this.
Yeah. Chris, now you have like 4 days to go get it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so Lobe Liquor is, I know it's been mentioned on HBS a couple of times as a place to, I think, pack heat if you're going to go. But I don't think it's that bad. And
sure.
The owners are really cool. So that store has been around since 1984 with the original owners. Evergreen is,
still a great place to shop, regardless of it being picked dry, but.
Yeah, that's where I found the private seller, actually.
Yeah.
So Evergreen still has, you gotta look
yeah.
for it, but, and it's also about having fresh eyes. Just a few months ago, about maybe 8 months ago, I found some chartreuse from the early 70s, just in a wine bin, just sitting out in a wine bin, not even behind the counter with the rest of the liquor. And the owner had no idea that it was even there.
Yeah.
He let me have it for free.
That's awesome.
You can still find some things.
So when did this pick up for you? I know there were moments and times where you really committed some time to this. When did you really jump into this? And when did you said you've been to every liquor store in Texas.
Well, that's, I've been open before 2008.
When did you complete that? When did you really get into it?
I don't know exactly when I completed that. I'd say probably spring of last year, maybe summer of last year is when I.
But you've been at this for at least 3 years.
Yeah, I started in at the end of 2016 early 2017, and I kind of got into it because I was the sales manager for a local brewery at the time, and so I was driving all over the place trying to get beer into wherever I could, and so I ended up at liquor stores.
So if you had a list of every store, I assume that you keep good records of everything.
Yeah.
So do you know what's the hit rate? I mean, you know, when you're out of 100 stores, how often do you find something?
That's a good question. Most stores, it depends what you mean by find something. Like, so I'm not looking for
worth your time. You walk in, you see some handles, so, some right. old.
This late. Is I don't mean to be like skirting the question. Your tastes change and you start looking for different things. So you actually, you go to a store and you don't see anything you like, but then 5 months later you go back to that store and there's something that you didn't catch or that you are into now. And all of a sudden that store that you didn't find anything at is a great store.
It's a great store,
yeah. So that's, I've encountered that a lot with getting into tequila lately. I'm going back to all this because the first year and a half, 2 years, I didn't look at all at any.
Yeah.
So now I have to go back through all the stores and look for the tequila.
Yeah, and for those who didn't catch that, you started collecting dusty bourbon, and you've now found a crap ton of dusty tequilas and other liqueurs. Like you've your first time through, you were just finding bourbon to. And last time we talked, I think you said you're sitting on. At any given moment in the year, sometimes 2,000 bottles.
Not that much, but yeah, maybe 1,500.
1,500 so. Bottles. Yeah. What's the most you've had at one time?
Probably around 1,800. That's including my mini collection.
I mean, I know at least for the social, every time we would interact, it's a few thousand dollars of bottles and cool dusty. I mean, it's something that. There's no other way to experience it in our state, unfortunately. Either you're the one taking the time off to go hunting, but either way, you're not getting it in a bar, you're not getting it anywhere else. So it's something that I've really enjoyed. And now that we actually have bottles, I'd like to pour something if you guys want to have a drink.
Let's do it. So this is interesting because these are imports. So you're not gonna. You're not going to find these if you go hunting around.
Yeah, this is an Italian export Old Crow Traveler that I picked up recently, and back when they had screw tops. And of course, you just can't go wrong with Old Crow. It's delicious.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually found some Old Crow Chessmen about 2 months ago at a store, and I haven't cracked it yet, but I there was like 15 of them there. I bought two of them. I left the rest.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, if you don't want this glass, then it's gonna be a dumb glass.
I got another glass of Archivus.
Yeah, you found an old Coach Chessman at retail?
Well, it was at a retail liquor store, and the owner has had that store since the 70s, and so he has hundreds of decanters. Some are empty, some are full. The Old Crows are, I think, mostly full. Some are empty, and so I bought a few.
Yeah, I remember you telling me one of your recent trips. You found a premise that was licensed but was now a bowling alley, I think, or a hardware store, and you saw in some storage high up the sides of an old Wild Turkey decanter box, and he's like, can I just check to see what's in that box?
Yeah,
and they were decanters that had been stored up there for years.
It was the 12 year, I guess, it was like the 1983 turkey, maybe.
Yeah, I mean,
see, that's the stuff that no one else is really is looking for.
So yeah, that was some sleuth work, actually. That was with the help of some the manager at Ralston's, and because he let me know. So TABC will only go back so far, and that hardware store was actually a liquor store that closed back in like 1982 or 83. It's been a hardware store ever since, and it's just had
liquor bottles in storage.
Just the remnants of just a couple of different decanters, and that was it, just sitting there.
Yeah, a little payday. That's awesome.
What's your favorite bottle, or best? You define that that you've ever found.
So at the underground place in Chicago Heights, that was one of my best. I found a 1981 Old Fitz, just pretty much perfect condition. That was a good one. Believe it or not, in Texas, I found just some, in Beaumont, I found four bottles of 1985 Maker's Mark VIP.
Well, I've seen you've had some of those Eagle Rare bottles as well.
That was in Houston.
Yeah.
I found that
Old Makers tastes so different.
Yeah, so that's 1985 is the last year that it was the original guard. That was before, I think, Hiram Walker had purchased Makers. So it was, I think, distilled by Hiram Walker from 1981 on. So after 1985, it's going to be a completely different
liquid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 85 is really the sweet spot, because anything after that, it is going to taste different. Mm-hmm. And early Makers is unbelievable. You know, that's some of the best stuff. That really is good.
It was unidentifiable. Somebody gave it to me blind. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I would have never guessed what it was.
Yeah. He was telling me that TABC, obviously anyone can look up a TABC license. And then there's your map, right?
Well, so yeah, as far as bourbon, like dusty hunting goes, anybody can do it. You just have to kind of decide to invest the time to take the dive and really, really dig into it. But that goes for any state. I mean, this is licenses like that are all public. It's all public information. You just have to dig into it and find it somewhere. Find it on Google. You know, just start researching it, and you'll come across it. Like California has an amazing system. So they also, you know, they have a lot of money behind it. Texas has a great system. There's an app, the TABC app. You can look at every liquor license in your vicinity, like from where you're at. Louisiana, not so much. They don't have the
archaic
funding.
Archaic shithole. I said it earlier.
basically anything before 2004, they're lost. They're blind. But they're starting to get their act together. So hunting in Louisiana is a feat, because you have to basically drive to every corner store, every bowling alley, every grocery store, and you never know what you're going to find. I found some 1988 Weller Special Reserve at a bar, and some Weller water, which I wouldn't suggest drinking, but and I found some 1999 Wellers, like three of them at a gas station in, where was it, Hammond, Louisiana, just like some random gas station, and they had purchased it from somebody else, and they had those bottles, and they didn't know what they were going to do with it. They sold it to me.
We took the family to Gonzales and middle of nowhere, Texas. And the tater in me still gets so excited being in the middle of nowhere, Texas, and seeing a liquor store.
Me too.
So I have to stop by. I have to see what they got. And, of course, it's funny. It's a running joke right now in today's current environment for liquor store owners in Houston to crack jokes about how many times they get asked about Blanton's or Weller or Eagle Rare, right?
Yeah.
I walk into these hole-in-the-wall mom-and-pop liquor stores in the middle of nowhere, Texas, just to look. I don't say anything. I don't ask for anything. First thing out of her mouth was, "We don't got any Wellers. We don't got any Blanton's." And I said, "Well, that's funny. We laugh about that in Houston, but I'm just looking to see what you got." And it the state is dry. I still have not been able. I used to. I mean, a lot of this is the part that sucked. Is a lot of people who work for the distributors, who are already going into liquor stores, they're there for a sales call. Once they learn to start picking over the shelves, they got real thin pretty quick.
Yeah,
it's something that. We're eventually, with the way things are going, it's going to be impossible just to even find it on secondary because people are drinking them too. All these are open.
And it's not quite dusty, but I think you can still find earlier makes that taste different than the stuff today.
Sure.
Like I've at a very popular store in Houston, I found some 2013 Russell's Reserve Rye and the Bourbon Single Barrel from 2013. It tastes completely different than the stuff now. So I mean, not dusty, wouldn't call it dusty, but
sure.
But there's that type of stuff I think is still out there.
Well, and
that was a popular store. People just didn't. It was the old label too. So you would think that people would grab it and say, "Hey, what's this?"
Mm-hmm. The term is still evolving, right? Yeah. So dusty used to mean something, and to a lot of people of certain ilk and income, dusty still means the same thing.
So I think we had a discussion on HBS about this. What do you consider dusty? My definition, I would say like even 90s and earlier would be the beginning of it. But really, I picture this stuff as the true dusties. But
there has to be time for like dust to actually collect and settle. I mean, dusty means that it's...
It originally meant, it was a shelf thing that sat there long enough to collect dust. But I would argue that anything of at least, it's kind of like the subject of abortion, totally different plot twist, right?
Wow.
So just listen, play along, hold on.
Yeah.
On the subject of abortion, at some point I can see the argument being made that there is a life in there and we should protect that life.
How did you make it?
I'm getting there. Okay. You have to follow along. Listen.
I'm seeing it.
So at one point you can argue that it's not a life. At another point, you can argue it is a life, but where that line is, I don't know. I don't feel as wrong, or I don't feel guilty when someone early on, you know, like let's say first trimester, whatever, don't feel so bad. Third trimester, I feel a little guilty because it definitely feels like there's a child there. Same thing with Dusty's. I don't know where the line is. I don't know where the line is. The line could be 2005, could be 2000.
I think we crossed the line.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, well, I'm getting canceled.
Yeah.
I think a dusty should be at least a couple labels before, right? Like at least a couple labels change so often now that by that definition.
That's interesting. Two labels, that means it's going to be quite a bit.
And at least 5-10 years ago.
They weren't changing that much back then. Like Ezra Brooks, I consider Ezra Brooks like from the 90s and earlier to be dusty, but the label's the same.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe it got shinier.
Well, it's like the Elijah Craig label, right? That two labels ago, those bottles might be considered dusties. The 2013, those sell for money. Those are the old labels.
Yeah.
And really, 2013 was three labels ago. Slight tweaks were done where they moved the 12 to the back. So I don't know where the line is what I'm saying. I don't know if there's a hard line. But Wild Turkey has changed their labels three times in the past 5 years. I wouldn't call any of those three dusties. Well, but I would call Elijah Craig from late 2011, I would call that a dusty.
So Elijah Craig, age-stated bottles is...
The old Eagle Rare is, I mean, it's definitely a different conversation from abortion.
I just
mean, I don't know where the line is. It's hard to crawl at a certain end of the spectrum. It definitely feels this could be considered a dusty. The old Eagle Rare 10-year single barrel, that I think, you know, that's 4 years ago. And you don't see those anywhere now, right? And when you do, it definitely goes for a little bit more. I don't know. It's hard to call. These I would definitely consider pre-2000s. Definitely consider those dusties.
Are you talking about the old Prentice
Tax Eagle Rare?
What's that?
The old Prentice Eagle Rare? Is that what you're talking about?
Like, just the one from 4 years ago. They moved the 10 to – they took the 10 off the net off the neck and moved it to the back label.
Right.
That wouldn't really be called the dusty, but if you've obviously found it – in a store, you'd be excited. Just like Fighting right. Cock 6 year age stated. That's 4 years ago. When yeah. you when you find that, you're like, shit, yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I found some half gallons of that in Houston pre-fire, actually, from like bottled in 98 about 2 months ago. Back to what I was saying before, it's still out there. You just have to go and know what to look for. But as far as like Dusty goes, I did want to ask you guys, why does it taste better? What's different?
So that was covered on a recent episode we did when we were somewhere recently. The discussion was made. So in the mid 1980s, everything before that, the yeast component for distillation was actually a fertilizer, and that was outlawed because it's dangerous.
Yeah.
Right. So I think when we try to recreate, you know, for instance, classic turkey, it was argued, was it the change in cypress fermenters to stainless steel tanks? Was it the change in barrel aging, young oak versus old oak?
Even the wood on the barrels.
Yeah.
The age
I mean,
of
all
wood.
Of these things are being speculated. But when you try to recreate.
That's what I was thinking. Cooperage.
Mm-hmm. When you try to recreate the taste of Stitzel Weller mm-hmm. or old National Distillers.
Right.
Their yeast component was fertilizer, and that was outlawed. And that's usually around mid-80s was usually around that change.
Is that when that
different.
Was outlawed?
Mid-1980s, yeah. I want to say 85, 86.
Did that have anything to do with them selling off their portfolio? Or
No, it was outlawed. I don't think the government cares when you're selling products.
Well, I'm just – so it was outlawed, but did that affect their
I'm sure.
Okay.
You know? Buffalo Trace, which is arguably the most successful bourbon distiller, uses box yeast. They don't give a shit about saving a yeast culture like the way Heaven Hill does, you know, where after the fire, they literally carried a bucket of yeast out.
Yeah.
Buffalo Trace uses box yeast. They somehow are the most highly coveted bourbon out there.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the solution is. I don't know what the answer is. I did tell this distiller we were talking to that you should do a run with fertilizer, but don't sell it. It's illegal to sell whiskey made from fertilizer yeast component. Don't sell it. If it's just an experiment, just do the R&D or do a distillation run with it and see if it yields a different result. You know?
I think part of the answer also could be because, you know, we talk about some of these older bottles and how the proof goes down slightly over
yeah.
time, right?
That also
doesn't
definitely.
That change the flavor?
Correct. Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
That goes to old bottle effect, right? So the argument, and a lot of people confuse the argument when it comes to, does my whiskey change after I open it? Short term, no. Long term, yes.
Sure.
Yeah. So as the evaporation, as it slowly evaporates, which is why you start seeing whiskey turn cloudy, is the alcohol can no longer stave off bacterial growth. So therefore, you start seeing a much more cloudier product. Of course it's going to affect the flavor. Yeah. I always say that Dusty has kind of a glue note, like an old Elmer's glue. I get a distinct quality, and it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's Old Crow or Bourbon Supreme, or that I.W. Harper. It tastes like a Dusty bourbon.
Yeah, there's like and the finish gets extended somehow also. The finish becomes longer is what I've noticed.
I also think with some of the best Dusties, and one of my favorites I brought is this Eagle Rare that I brought it because I hope we can kill it. There's not much left in there. These, like the old Eagle Rare, the old Stitzel Weller.
Beautiful stuff.
I think it's, but why it's so good, it's, I don't want to say that it's not complex or lacks complexity, but it has basic, it's the most basic bourbon
sure.
notes. It tastes like caramel and vanilla and a little oak.
Yeah, yeah. And, keep it simple.
And it's supposed to but be there's in, nothing yeah. wrong with it. Like yeah. there are no flaws, but it's also not nearly the most complex thing you'll ever taste. And you know, lower proof.
If you want
it's
complex,
just nice
you
to drink
go for like Angel's Envy or something where it's going to be double you know, finished in different barrels.
The port and everything going
yeah.
on in there.
Yeah, yeah, well, there's a lot actually done to the spirit. So what's in the backpack?
A whole lot of different things.
Really. Yeah, yeah. So
I wanted to try to bring something that I don't know if you've had it. You've probably had it. It's my favorite bourbon actually, and I've been looking for just the time to crack it. Is
wow, old Ezra 15 year. Show the camera.
There's a camera.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
There's a camera. We got a whole studio set up so you could just listen.
I just you know that's
wow. I've never seen that.
Have you ever tried this?
No.
Yeah. So this is Ezra Brooks. This is back before. Ooh. Before that was. Sold to a currently, I think it's currently Heaven Hill, produced now, if that's right. But
yes, that's correct. So that right there is basically, it's the same. Well, that, I mean, that's old Virgin. You remember Virgin was basically pre-fire Heaven Hill.
Yeah.
Now it's the new Heaven here, or Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond. But what's that, Medley?
This is Medley, yeah. Owensboro. Yeah, so if it was, I have a bottle that goes back to Hoffman from 69, but then the 1980 bottle that I have is actually, I think, distilled at Hoffman, bottled at Medley, but this is all Medley, and Medley is
some of the best.
Yeah, it's probably
it's arguably some of the best. I mean, it's up there for Stitzel Weller discussion.
For the rye? Or,
yeah, I mean, well, yeah. Medley's just fantastic. So, well, yeah, let's definitely, it's not open, huh?
No, the thing about this is when we open it, we got to let it breathe for a little bit because it's, actually, we should try it right when we open it and then let it breathe because it's entirely different after just like a
Let me just see the bottle.
Look at this beautiful box.
So I have a few of, not the 15 year, I've got a few of these old Ezras. They're so, pardon my French, they're goddamn delicious.
Yeah.
15 years ago, 100 proof, charcoal filter.
What year is that?
That's 1982.
Okay.
So that was distilled in, what, like 67?
Yeah.
Rare old sip and whiskey.
Interesting.
Show the camera.
Yeah.
I think this is an 83. Two 101s, but this is the 10 101.
Yeah. Export bottle. No, not export. That's our tax strip.
Old Prentice.
Yep. It's Lawrenceburg.
Hey, this one doesn't actually say charcoal filter, huh? No.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, so the ones late 80s.
Yeah, because didn't last time I was on, I think you had one that said charcoal.
All the late 80s
that happened, I think, when Glenmore purchased the portfolio.
Yeah.
But I don't think that it was charcoal filter when Medley was doing it. So Glenmore bought the portfolio in 1986, I believe. And then in 87 or 88 is when Ezra actually won the International Spirits Competition.
So I got it out, but that cork's breaking. Just FYI, you may need a backup cork immediately. Okay. Yeah, it's broken. All right.
Yeah, so that's my favorite. That's my favorite stuff. This is a pretty close second, actually.
And what is this retail for?
What's the retail price?
I'm sorry, not retail. What is this?
I was like 3 years old.
What does Dusty sell for? This Dusty, I would say, what, 400?
I won't sell it. I've seen him go for around 800.
800?
Yeah.
15-year-old.
But I don't sell my bottles of a 15-year-old Ezra.
Yeah.
That's the best stuff.
Hmm.
Here you go.
Yeah, I've never had
800
it.
Bucks. Yeah. 800 bucks. Wow. That box is just killer, too.
Yeah, they really go all out.
So it smells fantastic.
And I love the story about Ezra. You know, Ezra Brooks is not a real person. It was basically created because there was a shortage of Jack Daniels in 1956 or 55. So Ezra Brooks was created at Hoffman, and Jack Daniels sued them in federal court because it looked way too similar to Jack Daniels.
Sure.
But then Ezra Brooks ended up winning in the end because it said Kentucky bourbon, or Jack Daniels says Tennessee whiskey.
Yeah.
And the judge awarded the victory to Ezra Brooks.
Yeah, Jack has never hesitated in a lawsuit over a package design.
But their intention was to mimic Jack Daniels. Yeah. I mean, that was their set out goal. So Jack Daniels is probably not wrong for being at least
upset.
Put off by that.
Yeah, this is just packed with flavor. This is awesome.
It's going to get way better in like 5 minutes also.
Yeah. I have had it, but it's still amazing. Absolutely amazing. Yeah. I'm a huge fan. Again, speaking of Dusty's, was it 3 years ago they discontinued Ezra Brooks 7-year and replaced it with...
they brought it back. Didn't they?
The
barrel
the 7-year-old 101.
Yeah, the
it's now what is it?
It's barrels
now barrel proof, barrel something. It's barrel, something.
I thought it was like 112 or 115.
I'm trying to remember the new bottle shape.
Yeah. I can't believe I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah.
It's really good too.
Well, the old one with the brown label is what I literally I have one perfect 6-pack case of them.
Oh, nice.
And I threw them in the bunker, and they've been sitting there ever since, right next to some Heaven Hill.
It's a round bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The new one.
The new one's round?
Yeah. The 7-year is just like that, though.
I can picture it, but I can't. We haven't gotten the name yet, but yeah, it's round.
I mean, anything Ezra. The problem is I got so excited after trying this that I, of course, start sharing it, and now it's so super hard to find because all my friends, when they find it, they stock up.
Of course.
Yeah, that's and delicious.
It's
one of
the, you know,
it's really, really good old bourbon. Mm-hmm. And what year was that from?
Bottled in 82.
82.
So it was...
It blows my mind how we had such a difficult time selling bourbon back then. And so all of these beautiful gems just sat there.
Yeah. I don't know if it was such a difficult time. There was so much of it. And, you know, I don't know...
They weren't selling a lot of it, and it was pretty inexpensive. And so that's the whole reason decanters exist, is because we would put them into everything to make them collectible, like Beanie Babies.
It's interesting to look at the trends, you know, through the years to see why weren't people drinking this? Because they were drinking something else that marketing just happened to hit, and that was like the thing that people drank. And it changes through the years. And
Also, I think when the housewives started drinking, because they were not as into bourbon as they were into the clear liquors, which became really popular in like the 70s or something.
Sure.
Or after the Cold War. That was when it was vodka and gin, but mainly vodka, that became huge. And that really kind of pushed this to the...
To the side.
Yeah.
Which is so stupid. And recently there was some talk about some large American whiskey collections going up for auction.
Mm-hmm.
People complaining, look at these idiots. You know, any bourbon purist would be furious and want to, you know, drink your bourbon, don't collect it. Well, I don't understand what the complaint is. If it was not for these people who were collecting whiskey during a time in which whiskey wasn't even being drank that much, we would not have access to them now. The whole reason I'm looking at a bottle from 82 is because someone collected it and didn't drink it. So I always applaud them because now this generation gets to experience old vintage museum pieces.
It's a dead profile. It's a dead flavor profile.
Yeah, not being recreated at all.
Right. And that's part of why I think I really got into it. I'm kind of a history geek. I like to study American history and presidents and obscure presidents especially.
Sure.
And so I've read a lot about various presidents. They're mostly all closet alcoholics, actually, except for Trump, which is another reason.
To Amazing, yeah.
He has a vodka named after him.
Yeah.
It felt like almost just natural to start digging into the history of whiskey. So I don't just go around collecting bourbon. Or flipping or anything. I mean, I really try not to sell very, very much of it because I like keeping it. I like having it. And some of it I want to pass on to my kids. It's a piece of Americana, really.
Mom used to collect roosters.
What?
My mom used to collect roosters, Americana, tin, metal.
Weather vane?
Yeah, that sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
And,
I'm not going to make the joke.
Yeah. My mom was a huge fan of Cox. Now, the 100% agree with you. I've talked about it time and time again. These are time capsules.
Yeah.
It's so neat to be able to experience something like Anthony Starr from the episode we did from The Boys. We got to drink whiskey. It was bottled the year he was born, and everything he's ever accomplished in his lifetime, becoming a celebrity, being on the show The Boys, the superhero, supervillain, everything you've ever accomplished in life happened while this liquid was literally frozen in time. It's so neat to get to open it for the first time at 45 years old and taste something that's just tremendously from a bygone era and unique.
And knowing that everybody that, like, you know, Woodrow Wilson was experiencing the same flavor that you're experiencing, you know, just knowing that that is what people were drinking then and that they're not really drinking now.
At the second Whiskey Social, we got a bottle of scotch from World War II. It was bottled in 45, okay? At the time, he was living here. I tracked him down, got to know him. Who was the prime minister during World War II?
Churchill.
Right, Winston Churchill. His great-grandson. We got him to come to the Whiskey Social, and you can drink whiskey that was bottled when his great-grandfather, at the height of World War II, with his great-grandson.
Wow.
It was the neatest little bit of tying history together and having drinks with him. He passed a couple years ago, rest in peace, but it's just, yeah, everything about this hobby is the fact that it's really, actually, truly special.
You bought some bottles from me for this Whiskey Social, I think it was for the Whiskey Social from like 1910?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So the ginger brandy.
Yeah,
the ginger brandy. Yeah.
This is crazy stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So I've used it a lot.
How is it? Interesting.
Yeah, I've used it a lot recently. I opened it with Brendan Schaub and Brian Callen. Rest in peace. And
they're not dying after trying.
No. Brian Callen got canceled, accused of rape right after doing my show.
Wow.
Not on my show.
Okay.
Just
okay.
Chris has a bad history of guests on the show and what happens to them afterwards.
That's about
the
right.
The whole abortion thing is making more sense.
Yeah, yeah, a little bit. We opened it with them, and then I also took it to L.A. with me, and we made an old-fashioned out of it. 1915 brandy, and then one of the bottles, I bought two of them from you. One of them we actually used at the social, and we poured the whole thing this year at the event.
Right on.
So the other one has got about a third of it left. And, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we got to drink whiskey, or sorry, ginger brandy from 105 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, I think just as cool, speaking of bottles from the Whiskey Social, the Black Tot Rum.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the story behind that, you know, this is what the sailors were drinking.
Yeah, 1970, right? Yeah. So that's 50 years ago.
Well, and it was distilled. I think that they said that it has as old as 30-year-old stuff in the blend.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but
so some of it could have been distilled in the 40s.
Age, right, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure on the age. I always thought it was younger, like maybe 8 to 10 year. But, yeah, I mean, they stopped doing that Black Tot Rum in 1970 when, you know, Black Tot Day. I think it was July 31st. But we bought a ton of it, and it got to be opened for the first time and experienced. And it's just...
And dude, from a flagon?
Yeah, from a flagon, a stone nice. Flagon, yeah. Yeah.
Did you read any of the history of the ginger brandy? That?
No.
Okay. I'll send that to you.
By the way, it's supposed to help with diarrhea.
So the guy
you have
that,
too much of it.
The distiller the guy that he didn't actually distill it. Back then it was purchased from distilleries and blended. He died from acute stomach ailments of some kind.
Related to those?
You know, one could.
Well, yeah. I'm glad we took sips out of it then.
Right.
Yeah, so one of them, when we opened it, it had some cloudiness in it. We filtered it out. But we've drank quite a bit of it. Never had any problems. Made an old fashioned with it. It was
awesome. I love how it has. What was the alcohol percent? It was
37% or something.
But it was like 37 and 23 one hundredths.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like
it's
that.
It's some ridiculous small amount. Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty accurate for 1910 or 1914.
And for 115 year old or 105 year old brandy, it was arguably probably below 60 proof.
Yeah.
I mean, it had, for it to be that cloudy, it definitely, I'm willing to bet it lost some stuff.
So, you know where I got that was I go to estate sales and, just auctions, I guess.
Yeah.
But I went to one that morning, and I think I could talk to you that evening, but I was looking online, and this is all stuff that everybody can find. Just go look at the estate sales that are happening every day around town. I happened to see in the corner of the top shelf.
Like in a photo?
It was two bottles, and I couldn't see it super clearly, but they looked like they would be old. And
so you just went on a whim.
I went there, and I don't remember how much there was. They were pricey, but they almost looked like they were like potpourri or something. Like
sure.
They could be at Bed Bath & Beyond and be sold for $15 because it makes the bathroom look nicer or something.
Yeah.
And I was concerned about that, but it was the and this is what caused me to start researching glass manufacturing. So I ended up reading all these papers that were written about how to identify old glass bottles that were pre-machine made going into the first machine made and like the different types of machines. So that's how you start getting into this rabbit hole. And I learned a lot by getting those two bottles because I was determined to find out like exactly when they were made, what year they were made, because there wasn't much identifying marks. The tax strips weren't around for another 20 years or so. It all became a very educational experience.
I forgot that you are the one I picked those up from. Because I buy at auction, I buy from you, I buy from a guy locally named Bill Kerman. Yeah. I buy from all over the place, and I completely forgot that both of those came from you. They're tremendous, delicious, very weird, and it did taste like actual ginger, like spicy, vegetal ginger, not like, you know, not like what we taste now in like a soda or something.
It's an odd pour.
It's a very odd pour.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you go, what's it called? This pre-prohibition whiskey men, some website that's called like these pre-pro whiskey men or something like that.
Sure.
That's where I found the information on one of the makers. And there's quite a bit of info, actually. I mean, you can see where they first established their shop from like the late 1800s all the way through to where he passed out onto his son, I think. And then ultimately when he died, I think one of the shops caught fire sometime in the early 1900s also. But yeah, that's a pretty interesting website, actually.
So we're getting close to running out of time. What would you make as a recommendation to those out there wanting to know what's the best way to, I mean, it doesn't have to be something from the 80s, but what's the best path, a tip you could give to someone who's still looking?
Looking for older bottles or something?
Yeah, what do you think the best states are?
Well, I don't want to give away too much on that.
You're still looking.
I mean, yeah, I still enjoy hunting. I can tell you I've been to California a few times. It's just such a huge state that there's, you know, I always find things there. I'm still finding stuff in Texas, honestly. The Dallas area, it's amazing how, I don't know how many Dallas people are going to be watching or listening.
Quite a bit, yeah.
Okay, well, the Dallas hunters are lazy for the most part.
Yeah.
They all drive around in their vicinity. But just going to Terrell, which is 30 minutes outside Dallas, I found crazy bottles, just tons of great stuff. And for all, there's so many Dallas hunters, but they just don't do much. The photo that I sent you of all the Old Taylor and
yeah,
the,
crazy photos. Yeah.
Yeah. That was an hour outside Dallas.
Yeah. And I'll have these photos sent over to Jack to kind of, maybe we can show a few, while we're talking throughout the episode, just a few of the photos.
Yeah.
Ridiculous bottles.
Yeah. And a lot of those, I mean, yeah. So a lot of those photos were from outside Dallas. The bottle that I got from 1940, the Blue Ribbon Bottled and Bond Bourbon. That was North Texas. That was close to the Oklahoma border. And I had to go back up there a couple of times to talk the owner into selling it to me.
To sell it to you? How much?
Yeah, like maybe $250, $300, sure. Something like that. Well, I mean, well worth it, in my opinion. And plus, the drive up there is great. I mean, there's a lot of cool stores. So what I would say, first off, do your research. If you really want to do this and be successful at it, you have to study it. And so before I ever went to Illinois or ever went to California, I did spend weeks researching all the licenses, studying when they were first issued. If you can't find original dates, look at just numeric, like license number of 100 versus 10,000. 100 is probably going to be earlier, and start mapping it out that way.
So you're eliminating stores that are newer that are impossible for them to have something.
Yeah, if they've been open in the last 5 years, they're not going to have
any. Unless the DBA is the same. So, you know, like in Texas, you can also look up the DBAs, and then you go to the Secretary of State website, and you can see who owns those DBAs. I know that when I went to Indiana, almost every older liquor store is owned by, like, the same six people. But it would be broken up, like, two people here, two people there. But it was, like, always – it ended up being, like, six people that owned, like, almost every older liquor store. But, just do your research. It takes time, but then you're not wasting time when you're actually
there.
When
you're there, yeah.
Yeah, and you get rewarded because you do find things. There's a lot left. I'm not clearing out the stores. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
And everybody puts their pitchforks down when you say that each time. So.
Every time. Yeah. Well, listen, I can't thank you enough. Today's episode flew by. I feel like there's so much more to talk about.
Yeah, this was fun.
Thanks so much for coming by. Thank you so much for sharing your Ezra Brooks 15 year. It sure is a damn fine bottle. And cheers.
Yeah.
Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.